Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss and debate all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notetoscene@gmail.com. We have so much to talk about this week. Big news from Neck Deep, as it is, and with confidence. But first, we're going to talk about Pierce the Veil, who are back-ish with new stuff. And it's always good to have Pierce back. All right, let's go. So it was a surprising to get a message from you last night of Ronnie Radke getting owned by Vince Staples on Twitter.
Yeah, dude. Did you? I just couldn't even believe it. You and I have talked about Vince Staples off the show this year with his new album coming out, and I'm a big Vince Staples fan, but I couldn't get you on the train. But it was just so crazy to see those two worlds collide in the fashion that they did.
Yeah, we have talked about Vince, and for the listeners who aren't, familiar, he's a up and coming rapper signed to a major label. He's on Def Jam, and he's known for, like, I'd say he's known for being intellectual, quick-witted, and bars, and like he's fast as
For
fuck
sure.
when he raps. He's not the type of dude you want to like get into a Twitter war with, I'd say.
No,
Which,
not at
from what I
all.
could tell, what happened was Vince called out M. I mean, didn't call him out, but was
In a
basically
way.
saying, in a way, called out Eminem. And for those of you who don't know, Eminem is Ronnie Radke's favorite artist of all time. So Ronnie went in on Vince, and Vince just fucking came back and just tore him to pieces. Like, I've never seen anybody tear Ronnie up. I mean, it just goes to show Ronnie gets in fights in the scene, but like to watch him go against somebody he was so outclassed against, it was just something else.
He got absolutely dragged last night, and it was
Oh.
crazy because it was the talk. My entire Twitter feed was filled with people talking about, wait, is Ronnie Radke really beefing with Vince Staples on Twitter right now? And then they were going through the tweets, and some of the shit that Vince was dropping was just absolutely insane. And Ronnie had to end up just being like, yo, checked out your tunes, man. I dig it.
That was what was great about it, was it got to, I wouldn't so much call it a beef as a slaughter, because Ronnie was just at one point trying to make nice. Like, and Vince was like,
Absolutely.
no, Vince was not having it. He was like, I forgot what the KO was, but it went along the lines of, just picture me as a girl. Ronnie was saying like I want to be friends, and Vince was saying, just picture me as a girl and I'm sure you'll want to swing at me, commenting on Ronnie's domestic violence history. And that got like 12,000 retweets, and it was like KO. He was done.
It was an absolute fatality. Like, it was just so over at that point. And Vince even went off on one. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he basically called out the scene. And it had like 3,000 retweets on it. So it was a crazy night for sure.
Yeah, I saw Vince tweet, he was complaining, like, man, I call out one white rapper, and the lead singer of Fuck Out Boy is tweeting at me, like, or Fall Out Bitch, I think was the word he
Yeah,
used.
that was
Like,
it. That
just
was it.
disregarding the whole scene. But yeah, so that was funny to see, I thought.
So unusual, man. You never know what 2017 is going to throw at us.
We had another drugs reunion debunked. That happened
Who keeps
this
doing
week.
these things, man?
It's the same hacker, man. It's
You think it's the
whoever.
same one?
I think whoever hacked the, because you had texted me about this, listeners, if you weren't paying attention, the Destroy Rebuilds Until God Shows Twitter activated and said shit's coming in 2018, and I got a very excited text from Tyler Sharp, and I told you right away, I was like, horseshit,
I knew it was, but inside I was screaming, Glenn. Like every
horseshit.
time, it doesn't matter. Like just the fact that there's something happening, even though it's an obviously not, to have this discussion is fun.
Yeah, and for those who don't remember, Drugs is a supergroup formed by Craig Owens once he was kicked out of Chiodos, along with members of From First to Last, Story of the Year, Matchbook Romance, and Underminded. Am I forgetting anyone? It was just like
I don't
the
think so.
supergroup of the fucking time, and like the coolest thing that ever happened. And a lot of talk, in the post-hardcore Reddit, the sort of areas where like people like, You and I have talked about how much we love that Drugs album. You know, it's so great. And
It's a
this is one of
classic.
those, yeah, I would say it's a Scene classic. You know, it's a Feldy classic. And this is one of those reunions that it's a dream one for all of us, I think.
For
Like, we'd all
sure.
go to that show.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it's just one where you're like, this is probably never going to happen. But, you know, Craig owns the name, so he could technically, I mean, would you like to see Drugs be brought back with a different quote unquote super group lineup?
I would hate that,
You'd
you
hate
know?
that? Yeah.
Yeah, because I felt like Matt Good's guitar was such a big part of that sound,
For
you
sure,
know?
for sure. But I just,
And
it was so interesting to me because the day before this hack comes out, Matt Good tweets about the Drugs album saying he was listening to it in the gym or whatever and forgot about how much he liked it. And then Nick Martin replies with a bunch of emojis, like good emojis, you know, thinking about the good old times. And then that happens the next day, and I'm like, oh my God.
So after that Sleeping album flops, Nick Martin's like, "Yo, Drugs. What up,
Right.
Matt Good?
Yeah, he's
Here you
like,
got the studio,
hey.
fam.
Hey, yeah, after you
Here you
flop,
got
it's
the
time to look
studio,
back,
fam."
right? If only, man, if
My
only.
boy Kellen has a publishing deal with Warner now. He's, you know, he's out for himself. Gotta find a new band.
Yeah,
That was
man.
hilarious. Yeah, I think what those comments that the band members were making on social media inspired this little hacker. He was like, "Oh, now's a good time to start some fucking shit."
I wonder if the
But
hacker knows them. Like, I wonder if the hacker's like part of that, was part of that world when it happened.
yeah.
I don't know.
Yep, man, I was just looking back. The Drugs AP cover, I still think is one of my favorite AP covers of all time. Where like Craig's wearing the white jacket and they're standing in the rain, you know, or it's like sparks or
It's
rain
kind
is
of like
falling.
embers almost.
Yeah, I think that aesthetically is my favorite AP cover. It might be. Like it's up there. It's in the conversation.
Yeah,
It
dude.
was just such a cool band and such a cool peak Craig Owens, you know what I mean? Like
Totally. That was his, you know, the most relevant moment of Owen's career was when the Chiodos drama, and then he comes back with one of the
Yeah.
scene's biggest supergroups ever.
I love that cover. And I think they did, it was a split cover with Black Veil back then, like
Oh,
100
yeah,
bands, you know. But the
yep.
Drugs cover was just so much cooler. The white jacket, the rain, it just looked like it was the future, you know. And they premiered the Sex Life video on MTV too. It was like
Yeah, I
shit
forgot
was
about that.
happening again, you know?
I
Like,
forgot about that.
oh,
Just the lead up
man.
to that album was insane. All those
Yeah.
videos, and then when they dropped
Yeah.
If You Think This Song Is About You, and I was like, oh my God, this is gonna end everything.
And you remember the first show they
Oh
went out and
yeah.
did Craig opened with Thermacare, and
Yep.
everyone knew all the lyrics to Thermacare, even though that was a leaked Chiodos demo. Like,
Yep.
he was like, "No, this is my song." You know, even though it was a Chiodos song, he just opened with it and everybody knew it. And
Absolutely. It's like Ronnie with anything on Dying Is Your Latest Fashion.
right. We could do this all day, man. But yeah, that Drugs YouTube account still exists, and there's some gems on there. Like, there's like a really fake tour documentary of them before they do their first show, and
Yep.
it's so staged. Like, they all get in a circle, and Craig is like talking to them before the show, and he's like, "All right, guys, this is what everything's built up to." And he's like, "Drugs on three, one, two, three, drugs." Like, they actually do that if you go find this tour documentary. It's so
Right.
cliche. We could.
The last two videos that are uploaded on that channel too are B-sides that were not on the album. So if you
Good
never
ones
heard
too, like
those, go check out those songs.
Rehab and Rifle Rounds, and
What is the other one? I can't
The
remember
World
what was
Was
the other
Wrong
one.
This Time, My Voice Is Strong, or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, those good demos though. We could do this all day,
I
Tyler. I
know.
think
Gotta move on.
yeah, we gotta move on. All right, we gotta move on to listener questions. Listener Anthony D writes into notetoscene@gmail.com this week with a very interesting one. He says, "If you guys were to pick two of these debut albums to listen to for the rest of your lives, what would they be?" He gives us an interesting selection: Alisana's On Frail Wings, Bless the Falls, His Last Walk, Cute Is What We Aim For is the same old Blood Rush, Escape the Fates, Dying Is Your Latest Fashion, Fall Out Boy's Take This to Your Grave from First to Last, Dear Diary, Hawthorne Heights, The Silence, Panic at the Disco is a Fever, and Senses Fails, Let It Enfold You, and Yellow Card's Ocean Avenue. So, Anthony, this is a pretty brutal question, man. Like,
Right.
this one hurt. I figure we can kind of suffer through this one together, Tyler.
That's
So
definitely a good way to put it.
for me, it was like really easy quickly to nix Alisana.
Right, same here.
I could nix Cute Is What We Aim For.
Same.
I could nix Fall Out Boy. I could
same.
Nix Hawthorne Heights. I
yep.
could nix Yellow Card.
Yep.
Bless the Fall, His Last Walk. Love that album. Fucking did a lot for screamo and metalcore, and it's a classic to me, but I can nix it.
Oh no,
and
Matt. Are
that's
we
where
heading
that's
to
where
the
we diverge.
exact same? No, I
you're
think
with me.
I think we might be on the exact
Okay.
same page.
So now I end up in a predicament with Escape the Fate from First to Last, Panic of the Disco, and Senses Fail. And I didn't know, like, normally before we answer these questions, I have this shit figured out because I like to, you know, and to be a professional podcaster. But at this moment, I still don't know. I'm still deciding in my head.
Oh, okay.
This is hard because it's like, Senses Fails, Let It Unfold You is one of the most nostalgic albums to me. Like, it literally traces back to a summer in high school when I fell in love with a girl. And that album was the soundtrack to it, you know? And it's a fucking great classic album, and I could never separate from it. Panic at the Disco's Fever is a perfect album to me. I mean, it's just amazing. And Dear Diary by From First to Last, you know, that's one of my favorite bands. That's an album that got me into the darker side of the scene. And Escape the Fate's Dying Is Really Its Fashion is just one of my favorite albums of all time. It's something I relate to intensely personally on a lyrical and a sonic level. And it just captures a vibe and a time that I love so much. So that's where my predicament is. Where do you end up at, Tyler?
So I actually did manage to narrow it down to two, and I picked Escape the Fate, Dying Is Your Latest Fashion, and
Good
Panic
pick,
at
man.
The Disco, Phoebe You Can't Sweat Out.
Oh.
Those two albums were just so definitive for me. I didn't get into From First to Last until 2007-ish, right around the time when Sonny was leaving and they were about to release self-titled. And Senses Fail, I was late on that too. But those two albums, Panic and Escape the Fate, I just have so many memories with those albums, and they're just fantastic front to back. Like, there's no filler on those records. And those songs are just iconic, not only for the scene, but for my life in general. So I would definitely come down to those two albums.
So From First to Last, living through Sonny Moore, like, as a thing, and that album,
it changes.
Such an incredible experience. I
right.
mean, you just, it's like, you just can't imagine what it was like. It just, it pulled you right in. But of all these albums, it's the worst, I think. So I can let it go. Sonically and musically, I can let it go.
Yep.
And I'm down to Senses Fail, Panic the Disco, and Escape the Fate. And I can't ditch that Escape the Fate album. It's one of my favorites of all time. Dying Is Your Latest Fashion. So I got to pick that one. I'm going to drop Panic, and I'm going to hang on to Senses
wow.
Fail. Because Let It Unfold You is my fucking teenage childhood, whatever you want to call it. I'm taking one nostalgia and one good one. So Senses Fail and Escape the Fate for me. That was really tough. Listeners, please, like, never do that to us again. Like, I struggled with this one. I'm pulling my hair right now. I mean, seriously, like, a fever you can't sweat out. I mean, oh my god, dude. Like, that's one of the most definitive albums for me.
It,
like, I just had to drop it. Like,
it doesn't get more iconic than A Fever You Can't Sweat Out, man.
It hurts, fam.
And you
it
just
hurts.
Drew your line in the sand.
Oh, man. Well, we thank Anthony and are a little upset at him for writing into notesteen@gmail.com. If you have any questions for us, feel free to send them that way, and we will happily answer them on the show. But we got to move on into our main story this week, which is Pierce the Veil. Pierce the Veil are back. They released a new music video for Today, I Saw the Whole World. They also recently released a new EP, which contains an acoustic rendition of the aforementioned track that Tyler and I praised last episode. Pierce are back, and they're doing things. What's your reaction to this, Tyler Sharp?
It's good to see them back, and I'm glad that I'm excited that they're back. So to talk about this music video, first off, which they dropped for Today I Saw the Whole World, my first question I have is, will we ever see Vic Fuentes without a hat on again?
No, man. That it's done. He's going to have that forever.
Just everyone else in the band is losing it and jumping around and acting, you know, like rockers. And he's up there on the mic playing guitar, which I give him props, you know, doing the double duty up there, and he's got to stay focused. But come on, man, you're in a music video. Let's let it hang out. I want to see you without a hat on.
Don't do it to him, man. Like, leave my man alone. Like it's not. He doesn't have the hair he used to have. The hat makes it appear as if he does, and I'm okay with him rocking the hat, you know, to compensate.
At least have a beanie, not a snapback.
A beanie.
Come on, man.
Look, I'm gonna leave Vic alone on this one because I feel for my man. But yeah, you know, I like the weirdness of this video. Like, I like that it just seems to me like Pierce are having fun again. Like, yeah. It seemed like they were having fun in this video, and they're just acting strange and bizarre, and I like that. And like, even like they teased it with like this weird fire image, and it was just like in the air. It was good to have that, like, Pierce start teasing something again. Like, that was like, ooh, I haven't felt this in a long time.
The, you know, anticipation.
It was cool that, right, anticipating Pierce was a cool experience again. And I just, for yeah, sure. They're just like, they're loosening up in this video. It kind of feels like old Pierce again. They're just kind of doing weird shit. Like, yo, shouts to the mania waves in this video too. Did you see those?
Yeah,
taking it straight from Fall Out Boy.
I know. It felt very like 90s aggressive rock band video, kinda. Misadventures had a lot of rock radio moments. That's the direction they were going in, like, i.e. Circles. So it makes sense that they're gonna go embrace the general rock tendencies and appearance and delivery and so on. But I just like to see that they're like moving around, you know. I hate it when even semi-heavy bands just stand while they're playing. Like, to have, even though this is just a music video, just to have them jumping around and, like you said, like, just looking like they're having fun makes me enjoy it more.
It felt more jokey to me.
Yeah,
like you say,
definitely.
90s, it almost felt more parody of that. Yep. To me, like, they're not taking themselves too seriously. Like, this is totally sidebar and off topic, but the end of the video when they're all holding those torches, and bear with me, did you get like a Chiodos Illuminati vibe as well? Do you remember that?
Yeah, when the teaser, man, the teaser.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
That took me right back to Chiodos, which was just weird. It just doesn't even fit in the video. It has no connection to the rest of the video.
No correlation.
They're holding these torches, which is what Chiodos did to the build-up to Illuminati.
Gotta tie in the drugs era, man.
Not to sidebar too much, but like, we were just talking about the Undertaker video for
we were this week on Chiodos. A text thread. Yep,
man, dude, like, if you guys get a chance, go back and watch that Undertaker's video, because it just highlights Chiodos at the height of their fame when they were rock stars. And I lived in that area where the video was shot, and I remember the day like the casting went out, it was like Chiodos had posted on their MySpace like, yo, we're shooting a video. And like, everybody in class was texting, and everybody was going to the Chiodos video shoot that day. Like, people were skipping school, I think. Like, that was the thing. Everyone, and it just felt like my entire fucking school and everyone I knew went. And I didn't end up going, and I regret it to this fucking day. I like had to do something with my girlfriend. I don't know. My girlfriend's brother went too. You know,
oh,
it was like everybody went. That was the thing. Like, when Chiodos were that big, and they said, yo, you want to come see a free Chiodos show and be in our music video? Everyone went, and it was awesome.
We've talked about that moment so many times. I'll never let you live that down. That,
yeah,
you didn't
I should have went. Yeah, I don't know what. I played like badminton with my girlfriend or something. I don't know, something terrible like that. But yeah, sorry to sidebar. Back on Pierce. Like, he's, like we were saying, like, it's cool that they're having fun. Like, to me, Misadventures, that cycle, it just felt so tight and restrained, and like, just there wasn't much energy there. And like, it really all culminated for me with that Floral and Fading video. I was just like, what the fuck is this? You know, it was just so like, just low energy, just like, get the fuck out of here, you know. It was so cheeseball, and I was just like, this is the most, like, they were just so going for aesthetics, you know. And
sure.
It just, that to me represented the failure of this campaign. There was no like organic excitement anywhere to be found.
For sure. And I mean, to put Misadventures in context, now that we have a majority of 2017 in our rearview mirror, the scene's major releases this year have made Misadventures, at least to me, look so much better than it was in hindsight. You know, like, imagine if Misadventures comes out this year. It's an album of the year contender when you put it up against Sleeping with Sirens and All Time Low. Ooh. Like, it's
absolutely better than both of those.
It's
albums.
Nowhere near the caliber of Collide with the Sky. And ultimately, you know, we'll probably talk about later why the Misadventure Cycle wasn't what it should have been. But it's definitely passable as opposed to the failures that we've seen this year. And Today I Saw the Whole World is one of the most Selfish Machines kind of Collide era moments we get on the album. And I've listened to that song a lot this week since they released it as a single. And I'm kind of coming around to it more and more. Sambuca is my favorite track on the album. It could have been a standout, like, Selfish Machine song. It vibes really well between, like, fun and bouncy Pierce the Veil and then aggressive In Your Face. But there were just too many misses, ultimately. Like, Dive In, it's one of the worst openers ever. It drags on for almost 5 minutes, and the song, like, never gets to the point.
It's really interesting that they're pushing Whole World as a single, because... It feels like old
Pierce the Veil.
Yeah, but it's interesting because they push Circles. Circles makes sense as a radio single. You know what I'm saying? That's a song that's going to get radio play. This doesn't feel like a song that's going to get any kind of radio play to me. You know, this is like an old Pierce song. Like you said, this is like a deep cut almost. You know, this is going nowhere at radio. So why push it as a single? Maybe they're just trying to like highlight to their fan base, hey, the old us is kind of back in a way.
That's all I can think of, and I absolutely love it. It's not the best thing for the band, but it's gonna make their longevity last a little longer because the radio rock that we were getting wasn't that good. Like, Circles is a passable track. It's decent. It's good Pierce the Veil, wannabe Foo Fighters moment. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all it is, though.
It did its job at rock radio. Like, sure. It had success, and I thought it was the point of that song. And it was cool to hear Pierce on the radio. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like, every day, I'll say that. Like, I like that. But, you know, they can't totally go in that direction.
For sure. And that's why we have Today I Saw the Whole World, because Texas is Forever and The Divine Zero are such middle-of-the-road Pierce the Veil songs. Like, yeah, it's Pierce the Veil, but there's nothing overtly special there. We've heard it all before, and before, it was done better.
Man, The Divine Zero, when that hit, it was just, because that came before the album.
Right.
I was like, this is just not it, man. Like, this is not
it. It was
right
a miss, man. It was a miss.
It was empty. It just felt hollow in a way.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. And we had been waiting like, so long at that point for new Pierce.
It felt like Pierce were playing Pierce, you know? Pierce covering Pierce almost. But so it's interesting when we talk about Misadventures, because last week we were just talking about the biggest flops of 2017, you know, All Time Low, Sleeping, Motionless. And this album, you can't call it a flop at all, because it wasn't. It wasn't a failure, but it was a disappointment in some regards.
That's a good
commercially
word.
I'd say it was disappointing for us. So it sold 50,000 copies first week. And
it did 54 with streaming.
54 streaming, okay. And it's gone on to sell over 100,000. I think it's like around 110 right now.
Yep.
So, you know, that's not a flop or a failure by any means. There are a lot of bands that would kill to have those sales. But it's disappointing for Pierce when you consider in 2014, like at the height of their popularity, when everyone was waiting, I think Tyler, like you and I, like we were pegging them between 75,000 and 90,000 first week with a number one album. Like, that's what I thought Pierce were
absolutely
capable of at that point. Would you agree?
That's what we were talking about that summer when the album got announced. And I mean, like we said, Circles had mild success at rock radio, but the band is still playing like 15 to 3,000 cap rooms, whereas Bring Me's last album sold 55,000, so same ballpark, but they're playing like... the lowest they're playing is 3,000, and they're playing up to like 10,000 in LA right now. It's just the momentum shift here isn't where it should be for Pierce the Veil coming off the success of Collide with the Sky. Like, what they did following the Collide success was so crucial. They needed to top it. Because if they did, who knows where they'd be now? They might be giving A Day to Remember a run for their money. But Misadventure just wasn't enough.
At that moment in 2014, you know, All Time Low had just done, what, like 70,000 first week with Future Hearts?
75, traditional.
Okay, 75. And at that moment, Pierce felt bigger than All Time Low.
Absolutely.
Like, by far. Pierce felt like the biggest band in the scene at that moment. So we thought if they had capitalized on that hype, like, they could they could have had a number one album, you know, but they waited too long. And Collide with the Sky went on to sell 300,000 copies over that. You know, it's one of the few recent Scene albums to break 300,000. And Misadventures has only sold 100,000. So not a flop, but, you know, disappointing.
They're definitely not out. And they've had a fairly quiet 2017, which I kind of like. You know, they did the weird tour with Rise Against, and we just haven't had a lot to talk about Pierce the Veil in 2017, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I kind of like when bands go away for a little bit after they've had a bump in the road. But these recent moves, like this Today I Saw the Whole World thing, it feels good. It's got me excited about Pierce the Veil again, and I like that because I have been disappointed way too much from the Scene in 2017, so I'm glad Pierce is still here.
I do like that. I agree. I like the move. I like the distance. You know, like you said, they took an L here in a way, but they're not out. You know,
not
like
at
some
all.
Bands like Sleeping. That's gonna be tough to come back from. You know, Motionless, I think, are out. All Time Low are gonna have a tough time coming back. But Pierce, kind of, this one's could glide off of them. You know, this could just graze them and they could come back. Like if they keep making these good moves, they could come back stronger. Did you see that they played Cara Fanalia with Jeremy from A Day to Remember on stage?
I did, man. It brought back so many memories of 2010,
God,
like Pierce the Veil on the Selfless Machine cycle and A Day to Remember on the Homesick cycle. Like, this was such a moment when this song and video came out when Jeremy's in the phone booth. And it's cool to see Jeremy still down to relive those good old days, man. And he killed it. Like, he's still out there busting out those lines.
It was great. Like, he crushed it. And, dude, just to see the crowd flip out when he does those screams, because those screams are so iconic. You know, what if I can't
forget you? Oh,
and
dude,
it's funny, like, you brought up how this song, it was 2010, right?
Yep, when that's when out. Selfish Machines came out,
and this is like a precursor to that golden era of like 2012, 2013, when all these bands are the biggest bands in the Scene. They weren't quite there yet in 2010. You know, ADTR had popped off, but Pierce certainly didn't pop off with Selfish Machines, you know? And so just like this meeting of bands was such a classic moment in the Scene and a precursor to such a great time that we had, you know, and Collide eventually came out. And what I love too is when A Day to Remember dropped the video for All I Want, there's a moment where Vic is in the phone booth screaming it. Yeah, and it calls back to this music video, which was just such a classic callback.
It was such a fun time when this song came out because it felt like every big band in the Scene, there were so many bands on the rise and they all interacted with each other. So it just made it felt more like a community. And we got bangers like this song left and right from all these bands. And it just feels different now, man.
Yeah.
It just feels different now.
Anything else you got to hit on Pierce, T-Sharp?
I don't think so. I'm excited, but after 2017, I'm hesitant about anything from the Scene.
Okay. Moving on to our next story, which is Neck Deep. So a Neck Deep show in Nottingham was canceled after a fight with security occurred. This was pretty fucking crazy,
man. It looked pretty vicious, like a straight up brawl. I saw some chokeholds, some punches, lots of yelling.
This is like one of the first times I've seen in a while, like, the security actually like pull the band down. Like, the security, they actually put hands on the band, and like the band and their crew were fighting security. It wasn't just like a fan security thing, you know, it was the band against security against the fans. It just, you know, it looked messy, and it just really sucks when these things happen, and they had to cancel the show.
Yeah, they ended it right then and there. I think there were only like 2 to 3 songs in, too. I actually found a video of Ben coming out to apologize to fans that were like outside of the venue area, which was cool. Like, Neck Deep are always giving us reasons to call them out and doing stupid things, just generally stupid things. So for them to treat this situation the way they should have is a good is a good thing, and I'm glad we get to talk about that. But it's just unfortunate that these things keep happening, man. Like, why is this an issue at shows?
You know, I saw that video too of Ben, and I gotta shout that out because I thought that was real cool.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
To stay after the show outside the bus and like talk, have a legit like sit down talk with your fans, be like, he was saying like, listen, sorry, like we want to be up there playing for you just as bad as you want to be seeing us. And I thought that was a really like solid G move on Ben's part.
For sure. It's just so unfortunate that this happens. I can't tell you how many stories, you know, you and I both that we ran at AP about this
shit. I mean, you think back to the throwbacks, you know, there's the classic A Day to Remember moment, which kind of sparked a lot of this. Like, this hostility between security and fans. But a security guard had punched a fan at an A Day to Remember show, and Jeremy called them out from on stage and shut the show down. And, you know, when Jeremy calls somebody out, it's huge. You know what I mean? Like, the whole room, everybody stops. Like, when Jeremy's mad, the whole room freezes, you know? Jeremy is just a very powerful and commanding presence. And that was the biggest story of the week when that happened, I remember. And ever since then, it's, you know, we've just seen more and more stuff like this. Like, we saw...
After that, you know, I feel like it was the all-time low. I think might have been, like, at Six Flags with, like, security was, like, macing fans.
True. And we saw, you know, Parker from the story so far at Warped Tour. He became, like, the little hero of the month because a security guard was getting rough with fans, and he jumped off stage and shoved the dude, you know, all tough guy, and everybody just cheering for him, and they went back on stage and busted right into Daughters.
Oh,
right,
my God.
For all our feminist listeners, he busted right into that track. Even going back further, there's like, there's video of, like, I think 04, like, Pete went straight up getting into a brawl.
Really?
Security. Yeah, like, security jumped on a Fall Out Boy fan, and Pete, like, fucked the dude up. Like, Pete was, like, it was, like, old Chicago Pete. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Arma Angelus days. Yeah.
Like, still hardcore kid Pete. He beat the shit out of that security guard.
There's a video of Under Oath playing the Kevin Says stage on Warped Tour in 2003, and Tim is, like, losing it over the security guard because they're playing on the super small stage, everyone's getting crushed, and security's being rough with kids, and one of them had a chokehold, and Tim, like, threw his guitar at him. It's crazy. You can find it on YouTube.
I remember... I was at Warped Tour seeing, bringing back the Chiodos again, but Chiodos were like headlining Warped Tour this day, and I was in the crowd, and I watched a girl get four security guards, came into the crowd and dragged her out by her hair, and she was screaming the entire time. And
no,
I guess she had been starting shit or whatever, you know, but I mean, like, they got her, like, one security guard had her arm, one had her leg, and one got her by the hair, and they just dragged her out, and she was screaming and clawing the whole way, and
dang.
It just sucks that this sort of stuff happens, you know? And we've all had that moment where, like, the dick security guard, you know what I mean? We've all had that moment, I feel like, where we run into the security guard who just fucking sucks at the show.
For sure. Absolutely. At my peak show-going days, I went to a lot of, like, hardcore shows in Chicago and stuff where there wasn't security, so it was just fans fighting fans. And there was no security, so... But I have seen... There have been some instances where I've seen at Riot Fest, and just... It's so unfortunate, man. It's a bummer that kids go to these shows, and they're here to enjoy the band, and security, whose job is to keep people safe, are the ones who end up instigating all this violence.
Yeah, and what I really think it comes down to, because I did a story for AP on this, and I had to kind of dig deep, and I actually talked to some security guards, and there's a real disconnect between what security is used to and the type of fan bases and the type of crowds you encounter at a scene show.
Yes.
You know, like, security, they're not always the bad guys. Sometimes they're just genuinely surprised and shocked by not only what they're hearing musically, but also what the crowd is doing. Some of these security guards have just never seen this type of shit before. Like, just crowd surfing in circle pits and just insane moshing and just people jumping on stage, and they're just not used to it. You know, like, I remember there was a security guard I used to always see at the hip hop shows I go to back in Michigan. And I talk to him because I had seen him so many times, and he was, like, really into hip hop. And one time he was doing security for, I think it was like a, AFI show or something.
Oh
And he
man.
was just, yeah, and he was just like, y'all crazy. Like, what are you doing? You know, he just didn't get it, you know? And so I think there's a disconnect there. And it sucks because this is a time we kind of got to come together with security because there's just so many other bad situations happening that, you know, we really all need to work together as one unit. You know, security and fans need to be together at this point, you know, with everything going on from the Ariana Grande concert to Vegas. It's like there are bigger problems and we shouldn't be squabbling, you know.
Absolutely. I think when venues hire security, the security needs to be aware of what shows they're going to be doing and what the crowds are going to be like going into it. I think that should be like commonplace among venues hiring security out. I don't understand why it's such an issue, like why people are so surprised by it. I think there should be like, you should be aware of what you're getting yourself into when you work these things.
I remember at Warped Tour one year, somebody threw, we were in a crowd for, I think it was Silverstein, and somebody threw a bottle at a security guard's head and it hit him and he caught it. And he chucked it right back at the person.
Oh,
and
his supervisor
was like, yo, man, you can't do that.
You
You're going to get fired.
Right.
Like, they have to be the bigger person, you know. And sometimes they're just not used to these kind of crowds. And
absolutely.
I just, you know.
Case in point, anything else? Knocked Loose this summer. Do you remember that video of the security there who just wouldn't catch crowd surfers? So Brian jumped off stage and started catching crowd surfers himself.
Right.
They just need to be, venues need to make security aware of what shows they're going to be doing, what the crowd's going to be like. It's not that difficult to predict what crowds are going to be like at what shows.
The guy Brian making the good PR moves there. I like
it. Just all summer long, man. All summer
long, dude. Brian and Knock Loose with the good PR moves.
They're coming. They're coming, man.
Let's move on to our next story, which is With Confidence, who released a new music video for Waterfall, which is from their album Better Weather, which came out on Hopeless Records. Did you have a chance to check out this video, Tyler?
I did. And first, Fall Out Boy take on VR in a music video, and now With Confidence take on VR in a music video. Is this just going to be a thing that keeps happening on like music video storyboards for directors? Just pop punk bands, VR.
I think yes, but I liked this one a lot better than the Fall Out Boy one. Like, I could give two shits about the Fall Out Boy one. This one actually like emotionally resonated with me.
I guess I will never watch this video again. Because I don't like the song at all. And 99% of the time we watch music videos because we like the song. But explain to me what happens in this.
I'm going to give you the rundown. I'm going to give you, Tyler Sharp, and the listeners the rundown of this video. All so there's a couple, but they only date in virtual reality, right? Mm-hmm. So they've never actually met each other. They live on different sides of the earth, but they put on their VR goggles. And when they do that, they're together and they're in love and they go on dates and they have all these good times. But eventually they have to take their VR goggles off and they come out of that world and they're separate from each other. And, at one point in the video, I think the guy decides that, you know, you can't keep doing this. You can't keep living in this fake world where they're not really together. They're only together, you know, in the VR world. And it's kind of depressing for such a sweet song, but like, it's at the same time, it's a good look for the band, I think. And dude, when he finally makes the decision to not go back into the VR world, like he leaves the VR world and she's in there. When she gets back in that car and he's gone, it's fucking heartbreaking, man. Oh my God. Like that shit moved me, dude. It's depressing. They'll never meet. It left me hanging. It left me upset. And I actually like this song. I think it's like a smart building love song. I'm at like a 7.4 out of 10 on it.
Is it just like a rite of passage for pop punk bands to write a song like this? Because I was literally in a band in high school who wrote, that was the exact chorus in our song, and I can name like 10 more songs off the top of my head who have that.
It's very like lovey moody song that builds, you know, and
I think it's pretty disgusting.
The band have a good look at the same time. I think aesthetically they do well with this song in this video here, and I found the video very compelling and heartbreaking. So I was surprised by that. But moving on to like the bigger topic of With Confidence, are these the guys, Tyler? Are these the next guys?
I know
What do you
that you
think?
think they're the next guys, man. Here's what I will say. I will
And you turned
much.
me on to this band, let's point that out.
I did
You
call
put me on
out
them.
the APMA award, which they did get. I will say that if one new neon band, that's what I'm calling this little revolution that's happening, if one new neon band does take off, I would want it to be with Confidence and definitely not Water Parks.
That's good to hear, man. That's good to hear.
But I have yet to see why With Confidence would take off.
I'm going to give you some reasons here. So they have a very good look, which is very important. I think you might not like their music, but I like it, and I think a lot of other people really like it. They have more Twitter followers than Water Parks. They have more YouTube streams than Water Parks. They have more Spotify plays than Water Parks. The only reason that they are on tour opening for Water Parks right now is because Water Parks are managed by the Madden Brothers, and the Madden Brothers are very powerful in the music industry. And Water Parks, the Water Parks, think of the push they're getting. It's fake. You know what I mean? Most of the
Absolutely.
reason Water Parks did not deserve a lot of things they got. Whereas with
No.
Confidence, are at this bigger level statistically than Water Parks without that kind of push. They're just getting your basic Hopeless Records push. You know what I mean? And they've managed to eclipse Water Parks in streams and all that sort of thing and get like a real organic type of hype. Whereas Water Parks have needed the Madden Brothers to pull strings for them behind the scenes this whole time. Like the Madden Brothers are so. They're so powerful that they got Sleeping with Sirens to do the Olympics theme song. You know, they also manage Sleeping with Sirens, by the way. You know, so when you're managed by the Madden Brothers, you know, and that's just kind of that's why I think With Confidence are going to succeed over Water Parks in the end. They've had a lot less help and they're doing better, in my
I
opinion.
absolutely hope that they just bury Water Parks because I'm so over that band and it's barely happening yet. I just don't think I have no reason to believe that it's gonna happen yet because I don't think these songs are strong enough to actually break out. Like, yes, they have streaming momentum, good for them. Give me the full length and let me listen to it and we'll talk after.
You didn't like those B-sides either, did
I
you?
did not at all.
Man, I jammed those like for the end of the summer,
I
every
could
night. I
not
loved them.
believe that you like those songs, man.
I just like I like this band. Like I got a good feeling. I think they might be good at music.
2017,
I'm not sure. I think so.
man.
It's a rare thing to find in 2017, fam.
We're just debating on which scene bands are actually good at music.
Yeah, there's a band we'll talk about that
That.
where the jury's out. Okay, anything else? I know, I'm sorry. Thanks for talking about this band with me, Tyler.
No
I know there's not
problem.
much else you want to say.
Nope. You
All
got to give me the full length and we'll talk some
right. Okay.
more.
All right. That'll be an interesting thing to revisit for the show.
For sure.
So look out for that, listeners. All right. Pop story of the week is none other than the GOAT, Eminem. He went at Donald Trump in a cipher on the BET Awards. Holy shit, Tyler Sharp. This was fucking insane. Eminem fucking eviscerated Donald Trump, and it was fantastic. It was exactly what the world needed. What was your reaction, Tyler?
I will totally agree with that. It was fantastic. But my thing is that this is the most strategic move in the music industry in 2017. People act like it was some grassroots, freestyle that he just rattled off the top of his head, but everything about this was formulated from the ground up, like behind the scenes. Did everyone forget that it's rumored that he's dropping an album next month? Like, this was
Oh, yeah.
so planned out as a PR move that it's ridiculous. So it
Absolutely.
takes away from the sincerity of his words when you realize how formulated all of this was. Now, that being said, it was the best possible move he could have done.
Okay, and I have a little counterpoint to your PR point.
Okay.
Yes, cynically, it is the best PR move for him to make with an album coming out. But you could also look at it as the riskiest one because Eminem has a lot of conservative fans. He is a very broad-reaching pop star. Like he's from Michigan where I grew up. Michigan's a Republican voting state responsible for putting Trump in office. Everybody in Michigan loves him. He knows this is the type of thing that's going to divide his fan base. And I sort of see that as like punk as fuck. He doesn't give a shit, you know? He's taking a risk here. Even though it is a good PR move from the liberal sense, the lens we look through, it is a risky one, I think. And I sort of respect that.
I see your side, but I just don't agree with it
Like
that
the same type
much.
of people
I
who
get
like
it.
Kid Rock like Eminem is my point. You know what I mean?
Sure,
He's gonna piss those people off.
but this is what Eminem does. He's offensive. He's called
Right.
out Clinton, he called out Bush, and now he's calling out Trump. Like, this isn't that new in a way that this is just what Eminem does. I was almost expecting this to happen in some way. I didn't know that it was going to be this big and in this way. I kind of thought maybe he'd just drop some bars on the new album against Trump, maybe have a song come out against Trump, kind of like he did with Bush. But no art, the thing, the reason why it was so big is that no artist on his level will come out 100% and do something like this against Trump in this way. And like Bob Leff said on CNN this week, like, hip hop controls the youth of America. So on one hand, we have Taylor Swift like punching down on a beef that was over years ago. And then we have Eminem coming back with this undeniable statement that America needs to hear. And he's dominated the conversation on left and right sides all week. So
Like you
it was
said,
perfect.
hip hop is controlling pop music right now, and Eminem is arguably the biggest rapper. I don't know
Absolutely.
another rapper right now that can do a million first week. I mean Drake's in the, him or Drake probably are
Sure.
the biggest rapper. But M is just huge. And like you said, he's the first artist to do this, to just straight up come out and be like, fuck Trump in such a public and artistic way. And going back to the cipher, I really like that they included the screw ups in it. Like it made it feel so authentic. You know, the moments where he misses and he's like, just oops. He's like, oops, I'm gonna start over. Fuck it. You know, like it just made it feel so much more authentic, him actually keeping the imperfections in. And like everyone who knows M can really rap. He's really a good rapper. Like
Yes.
you just YouTube, if you ever get a chance, YouTube rappers talking about Eminem, and you will see every rapper from 50 Cent to Lil Wayne, when they get asked like who would you not fuck with, they're all like Eminem. That guy's crazy. Like they will not battle rap Eminem because they know he's insane. And I just like seeing how authentic and good he is in his natural environment, like a rap cipher. I like the facial hair too. We haven't seen facial hair him ever. That's dope. He looks like a little more, a little hard. I don't know, a little insane.
It looks kind of like, yeah, kind of like what you would expect to see in the 3 a.m. video. You remember that song?
Yeah, true. Yeah, so it's interesting that, like, the Mathers LP too felt so internal to me. You think about a song like Monster, like battling with the monster and the demons in his head. And is this is going to be an outward thing? Like this new Eminem album coming up. You think it's going to be just like an assault on Trump and an assault on all the fucked up things in the world right now?
I think he certainly set the precedent for that. It's just, I can't believe that it took the music industry this long to do it. Like, where the fuck are you at, Green Day? Like, you showed out in 2004. Like, American Idiot was the, I don't want to be a part of your redneck agenda, Bush. Like, that was the counterculture revolution of that time. And
And when Green Day did that, the Bush hate hadn't quite peaked yet. It hadn't really boiled over. Green Day were early. When they put American Idiot out, people were offended. You know what I mean? Not everybody was on that train yet. They would get on that train eventually, partially thanks to Green Day, I think. Like dude, straight up, Holiday is a song that helped me realize how much I hate Bush. You know what I mean? Straight up.
And it's just, I don't understand how artists can just sit by idly and worry about alienating their fan bases when they have an opportunity to do something special. Like, Green Day should have written American Idiot Part 2,
I mean,
and they pissed it away for Revolution Radio
we were complaining about that since
when it
that album
happened.
came out. You and I have not, we haven't stopped. You can go back and listen to old No Scene episodes where Tyler and I are like, where is American Idiot Part 2? What is this trash? Go home, Green Day.
Absolutely. And it's just ridiculous to me that it hadn't happened yet, and they just kind of sat by and fed us this shitty, almost throwback Green Day fodder, but I guess it doesn't matter because everyone's going to go see Green Day anyway. I mean, they sold out arenas all of this year.
Right.
Yo, shouts to Royce da 5'9", the OG Detroit rapper who is in the background of this cypher.
Was he in
there? He's standing in the background, yeah. First, I thought it was D12 at first, but then I looked, you know, I was like, who are all these dudes? And mm-hmm. I looked and I saw Royce and I was like, oh, that's so cool. Because Royce is like an OG Detroit rapper and, you know, M put him on. And it's just cool that he's still hanging with them, you know, and he's there backing him up. And I think the other guys are some Detroit rappers and some Shady Records rappers that are like loosely affiliated with them. But cool to see Royce there. Did you hear somebody put out like a mashup of this song with Rage Against the Machine's Bulls on Parade?
Dude, I did see it, but I haven't listened to it yet. Is it good?
It's okay. It's okay.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. It's not like blow your mind amazing.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Speaking of the Eminem stuff coming out, did you hear M's verse on Pink's new song, Revenge?
I did, and I was kind of disappointed.
Dude, it's kind of
it felt
it's very Chance.
Yeah,
it's very Chance the Rapper. It's very Eminem doing Chance the Rapper, which is interesting to me because it makes me wonder when we talk about this direction of like what sonically and aesthetically is M gonna do on his next album. Is he going to react to SoundCloud rap? Is he gonna really react to trap? Is he gonna remain a pop star? Is he gonna go old school M? Like, what's he gonna do? And this is sort of the first glimpse we have at new Eminem in this mode, and he's doing kind of a Chance the Rapper kind of weirdo backpacky thing, and I thought that was interesting. But what I also thought was interesting was the final lyrics of his verse are, "You're a whore, you're a whore, this is war," you know, yelling at a girl who cheated on him. So here we go, M's back, and he's already controversial. You know, that lyric's already gonna piss people off.
That's his job, man. Like I said before, he is here to offend you. That's how it's always been from day one. So this was a good move. I'm a cynic. That's what I've learned from this podcast. And the music industry is bullshit, but I'm excited about Eminem. I'm glad everyone is talking about him, right and left. Doesn't matter where you go, you can't escape Eminem this week. And I really wish he would have dropped a new song this Friday.
Like, I mean, are you not stoked, Tyler?
I am absolutely stoked.
It's M.
You can't not be stoked, man.
I mean, this is like, I don't know what this is. This is like the Olympics or Christmas. You know, it's just getting a new M album. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's crazy to think like the Marshall.
And now we know he's coming out guns blazing. Like he's angry.
Absolutely.
He's got fuel, you know? Like,
this isn't going to be watered down.
Right. Like the Matters LP2, we didn't really know what was driving him for that. That maybe just felt like he just had to make an album.
Just kind of.
Whereas this he has a reason. You see it in his eyes in that cipher. He's coming for Trump. And I like how Trump knows not to fuck with Eminem.
He didn't
like Trump,
hit back.
He will start a Twitter war with anyone, but he knows not to tweet at Eminem because Eminem will just slaughter him.
I
the same way Vin slaughtered Ronnie, M would just eat Trump up. And Trump knows it. He's like, I love Trump will fuck with anybody. North Korea. Anybody.
The Packers.
Eminem? No. And that's my favorite thing about Eminem. Nobody will fuck with Eminem because they know he's crazy, you know?
That, I couldn't believe it, man. I waited. Every day I was waiting for it this week. When is Trump going to fire back? And then by like Thursday, I'm like, it's over.
It would be a disaster for Trump too, because M would just own him. It would get a million retweets, you know, and that's how it would go. Shouts to Pink for getting that M feature. Like, what favor did she have to cash in for that? You know what I mean?
Aren't they
to get
homies, an Eminem though? Feature? Aren't they homies?
I think so, yeah. But, you know, like where Pink is in her career right now, it's not exactly the best look for M to be on a Pink record. I mean,
I don't know. I think that's some old school homies.
Old school. Okay. Let's move on really quickly before we go. Let's hit our last story. Rome and Knuckle Puck, two rising pop punk bands, both released new albums this week. Tyler and I are going to quickly touch on both of those albums and pick which one we like better. All right. You want to start this off, Tyler?
Yeah, I'll go for it.
Start with Rome.
Okay, let's go with Rome then. Rome's album, I was very pleasantly surprised by. And it's not because I can't stand the Knuckle Puck album.
Okay, so you've given away your position already.
I have, but I couldn't hold that in any longer. I was so surprised with how I liked this Rome album. I was not expecting it at all. Like, playing Fiction was the first single that they released off the album. And I actually didn't like it when it first came out. And then when I sat down to listen to this album this weekend, I was like, this is really good. It didn't feel like they were trying to rip off Set Your Goals anymore. Like, this felt like an almost refreshing take on a mix of new wave pop punk and a mix of like early 2000s pop punk. And another track that I love off this album is Flatline. And I think it's going to be more of a deep cut, but I've heard every moment of this song in other songs in the past before. But like I said, it doesn't, I love pop punk songs that don't feel like pop punk songs. And this feels like a great rock meets pop punk song. Those riffs are so charging. The verses are really low, and then it comes in big with the chorus. So I really enjoyed this album overall. It's not perfect by any means. It does have filler, but it is much better than the pile of garbage that is the Knuckle Puck album. The mix is so muddy. We've talked about a lot of these songs, all of the singles on previous episodes.
Give me a score on the Rome album, Tyler.
The Rome album, I'm at a 7-ish. Right, maybe right above it, like a 7.1, 7.2.
Okay.
Knuckle Puck.
No, the Knuckle Puck album, Shapeshifter.
Knuckle Puck mix is all muddy. Everything just kind of blends together at certain points. And like we've said on episodes before, they're just not good songwriters. Like, this is the conclusion we reach with this album. And the Golden Boys, you know, the Golden Risers that were Knuckle Puck are no more after this album. The hype will be snuffed from the room. And I could see this band falling pretty hard after this cycle and throughout this cycle, because these songs aren't here. There's nothing special about this. There was something special about this band when they were playing, you know, Cellars in Northwest Indiana when I was seeing them like 3 years ago. It felt new. It felt like something was there. But now that they're on this level and they're producing these songs, they need help. And they didn't get any on this album. So I am at a 4.5 on the Knuckle Puck album.
Okay. For me, so yeah, Rome, Great Heights and Nosedives, this album, which came out on Hopeless, was a pleasant surprise for me. I think it's like they're a competent pop punk band. This is like good car driving music. It's like at moments it's like a bit feisty, like Good Charlotte. Like, they're not afraid to experiment with poppier and more punk elements, which I like. It kind of takes the record in like a more jaggedy direction. Some standouts, I like Alive, just like breezy pop punk. I like Rich Life because I got like really playful Good Charlotte vibes off that song, which I was like, wow, very cool. Playing Fiction, great single with a fucking spectacular chorus. I thought that was a good choice for the single. Overall, it's very pleasant to listen to. It's like good to take on a road trip or good to go like skateboard to.
Definitely.
I'm at like, there's a lot of filler on the album for me. I hate the song Guilty Melody, so I'm at like a 6.9 out of 10. Okay. It's like they're right there for me, you know. They're almost a 7. Like, they're just, I think next record they'll probably do it. You know, it's they're just missing just a little bit. Yep. Like, they just, to be a really good band and get like a 7 out of 10, they just need a little bit more. Yep. Knuckle Puck, Shapeshifter. My reaction to this album, Star Wars, Luke Skywalker first walks into the bay and sees the Millennium Falcon. What a piece of junk. You know, it says that is literally the image I had in my head. The opener is a messy wall of sound and reverb slop. Learn to play your instruments, fam. Learn to play your instruments. The song Everyone Lies to Me. Okay, comeback kid, sit down. Like, I was giggling during that song, dude. It's like, I tried to find
kid.
You know what I mean? Like, trying to be hard as shit. Like,
kinda.
Like, I tried to find one competent song and I couldn't. Like, Want Me Around, their little main ripoff, is like the closest thing they have to a competent song. These guys, I mean, like you said, it's gonna be over for them if they don't get their shit together. They need a producer like Bendith or Feldy to beat their fucking ass into shape and get them to make good songs, or it's over. I thank the band for only making the album 10 songs because it was hard to get through. And also, just like, fuck Plastic Brains, because I just especially hated that song. So fuck that song. I give the album 4 out of 10. That's, and my choice obviously is Rome. I like the Rome album better than I like the Knucklepuck album.
Nice. Sounds like we're on the same page.
Yeah. Proposition for you before we go.
Okay.
Did Seaway low-key drop the best pop-punk album of 2017?
They are definitely in that conversation.
I mean, give me somebody who beats them. I'm trying to think.
I'm going to have to think about this one.
It's like my thinking is it's better than the Neck Deep album.
It's close for me.
It's better than the Knucklepuck album.
I think it's better than
this Rome album. It's close with the Rome album, but I think it's better.
We're gonna have to do some charting at the end of the year.
By
on
virtue
some
of 2017 being a bad year, I think Seaway backdoored their way into best pop punk album of 2017, which is a shame because we didn't talk about it at all.
Absolutely, but go listen to Car Seat Headrests. Go listen to London. Mm-hmm. Those tracks are amazing, and they're definitely two of my most favorite pop punk songs of the year.
So you're sticking with a no for now, though, on that little prop?
I'm going to stick with no, but at the end of the year, when we do our, you know, when we do our recap of 2017 episodes on what was good for each genre, mm-hmm. we'll definitely have that conversation.
I'm at a yes right now. I think so far they've won. When I look at, I mean, just by virtue of the lack of good competition, I think they won.
I'll just have to go back and look through every pop punk release because I want to make sure I get it right.
That story so far didn't come out yet. You know what I mean?
I know.
All right. That is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review and or a star rating on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars and we will love you. If you have any questions for the show, write into notetoscene@gmail.com and we will happily answer them on the show. All right. See you next week.